and welcome to the next episode of Microsoft Dev Radio. I'm Jerry Nixon, and I'm here with Buck Woody from the Azure team, and we're talking about how developers can think architecturally to build applications that can scale and scale and scale using some of the tools that are given to us through Azure, and then even the next level further, what if we scale beyond belief? Buck, welcome back to the show.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. It's good to be here from sunny. Okay, I'm kidding. It's not sunny. Downtown Covington, which is near Seattle.
Ah, okay. So talk to us first. The whole premise here is that I've been coding from the wrong end. What do you mean?
Yeah, so we normally start out with these architectures where we start out with the front end. And we design the screens, and we get the screens laid out, and we do everything just so. And then we figure out how to process the data that's there. And then somehow we got to figure out where to persist it. We got to store it back. And processing and persistence is something that a relational database does really well. So we make these hard links between our code and the database. And we almost go back to a sort of a two-tier architecture, which is verboten, right? Won't scale very well. We kid ourselves by putting veneers over it, but we're now highly dependent on the database's structure and scale up, right? So to scale out, you have to start thinking about where does that data live? So it actually forces us to think from the back end first, which is the data end first, not the database, but the data itself. And we classify that data. And when we talked a couple of times ago, we mentioned about the different processes you can use to break apart that data into its disparate datums. And then you can take that data set that falls out of that and put it where it goes. Some stuff goes in a database. Some stuff goes in blobs like we talked about. Some stuff goes in NoSQL type tables. And other stuff goes maybe even in a queue, or a worker thread, something like that, or a cache, or all the above.
And you're talking generally, but these are all available specifically in Azure, every single thing that you just mentioned.
Absolutely.
I just love storage nerds like you who use the word datum so casually. Okay, so though we have these things in our toolbox, a lot of developers don't even know they're there. We talked about that in the last episode, how we would use each one. What if our application really scales?
So, yeah, we get into this idea then if you start with the data as the beginning instead of the front end being the beginning. We think a lot about front ends being very wide, but think a little bit about taking that to another level. Think about now we've freed that front end. We no longer care. We don't even care if it's a person on the other end. It doesn't have to be just a phone. Doesn't have to be just this, that, or the other. It could be a device. In fact, it could be something that uses what we call telemetrics, and that means the device itself talks back automatically based on some condition. You may have this in your house right now if you're part of a smart grid on the electronics systems, the electrical systems in the U.S. They put these special boxes inside your power meter that are full-up computers, by the way. They're like a little Raspberry Pi or something, and they've got an IPv6 address. And they go out and they actually broadcast, and the guy drives around the neighborhood with a collector and collects the data, or it's hardwired right through the power system to drop data back in a system. This is all of the data, like when it turned on the heater last, how much electricity you used, what the condition of the grid was. They know more about you than you can possibly imagine. Or cameras. Every building we go to has tons of cameras, and these things are enabled. And they are also have telemetric devices in them. Our phones have telemetric GPS systems and so on. In fact, I heard of one company that I was talking with that was thinking about maybe taking a hypersonic signal in a television, turning on your telephone, your smartphone, and recording the fact that you saw a certain commercial.
I don't know if I like that.
Oh, I know, but the neat thing is you'll never know. And so they basically record this data. So all these things
is it transmitted over Skynet?
Exactly. Oh, I argued for Azure being called Skynet, and I was roundly told to leave the room again, as I usually am. No,
what
these
are you doing
things
in here, Buck? That's what they said.
Yeah,
why
didn't we let you go? The point is that this data can pile up really fast. When I was in a manufacturing company, our machines that manufactured parts were also instrumented with this kind of information. And as they would make a part, they were electronic parts, they would record the state and the serial numbers and everything about that device, each machine would create up to a megabyte of data per.
Holy smokes. I'm trying to
Per device.
envision dreaming. I'm trying to envision architecting a system, or designing, architecting isn't a verb, right? Designing a system that can actually handle this quantity of not just data, but this quantity of interaction as
It's
well.
unreal.
Holy smokes. It is
Yeah.
really unreal.
It really is. And then you think about the fact that these machines we designed or had in the manufacturing location would spit that data back to the large system we used for inventory control, would order parts when it got low. I mean, the old joke was we could all go home and the thing would keep working for years after we quit talking to it because it would be ordering. The systems on the other end were programmed to take the order, start the shipment, and so on. Everything just happened automatically. Robots were taking care of the whole nine yards. So Skynet isn't that far up. But
It's
when you
not that
think
great. Thanks for that comforting word. So,
So
we're envisioning a system that backs up a dump truck full of data, only to dump on us dump trucks full of data. We have
yeah,
so
absolutely.
much data. Now, what are you going to do?
Yeah, so we get into this new sexy term we've got called big data. And oh, I love buzzwords. Big
It's like
data.
cloud.
So, yeah, cloud, big data, data scientist. I like that one. I wrote a
You know,
post the
but
other day.
data has been big for a long time. I mean, is this really something? I don't understand what big data is trying to get across here.
Yeah, so you start asking yourself, what does big data mean? What is big data? So there's this group out there called Forrester, and they do a lot of IT definitions for everybody, and everybody points and said, well, Forrester says, and they came out with this thing called the 4 Vs or the 5 Vs, velocity, volume. It was very cool sounding. I didn't really get it. I try to be a smart guy, but sometimes I'm a simple man, and I just that didn't make sense. And so I came up with this
Sometime the
other
truth comes
definition.
out.
I made this other definition. I'll let you read it and you tell me what you think.
Data that you can't get an answer from an acceptable period of time with your current technology. Oh, with your current technology. Yeah, because the answer is processing so long, or it's so large that it takes too much bandwidth, or what are all the reasons that cause it to be unacceptable?
Yeah, this to me is a little simpler. I just say, well, what are you trying to get to? If I tried to process payroll on a Commodore 64, that's big data. But it may fit inside Excel, right? So it depends on the device. It depends on my needs. Am I calculating the data, or is it just a large volume of data? Is it, and so on. So by the way, this simpler definition is encompassed within the Forrester one. It's just I have to read things and then put it in regular Southern English, and then I understand what's going on. So this
That's
is what.
fascinating, actually, to see how it's relative, too. How when I process on my desktop an image, it's pretty quick. But when I
Yep.
take that same image and I take it to my wife's laptop, which is junk, right? It's like wong, 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 wong.
Yep.
For her, I've suddenly given her big data.
Big data. Yeah. We won't go there. All right. So the next thing we'll talk about then are once we've defined it, we need to talk about the stages of big data. I'll just let that one go. I could have, but I'm not gonna. So there's stages of data, and I believe that there's four. There's sort of sourcing, and I might even say and or ingressing data. We'll talk about that in a minute. And then storing and processing data, and then analyzing data, and then presenting the data. So those are the
And or
parts.
egressing.
Yeah, sure.
Get that? Yeah.
Yeah, that's sure. That might work in the
You're not the
present
only guy
purpose.
who knows big words. That's
There
all
you
I'm saying,
go.
Buck.
There you go. Yeah, so those are the four stages I think of sort of big data. I do get the question though from time to time, does this look like anything else to you? What would you
Well, to
call?
me, well, this is sort of the I don't know, the standard process behind business intelligence. It's, I
BI?
mean, yeah, so is BI just the same? This is just BI with another name?
Yeah, I thought about that long and hard too when I was looking at this big data thing, and I looked at what you needed to do with sort of big data. To me, it's slightly different. So in big data, I might look at it this way. I might look at source and ingress. You always bring it in. And then there's maybe the store and process. That certainly works. But what's the difference between analysis and presentation?
Well, let's see. Now, a presentation is rather
Is there a
systematic, right?
difference? Is there
Well,
a difference?
it's absolutely, there has to be, doesn't there? Analysis is some sort of either, I guess, programmatic logic could analyze it, or some sort of human analysis, finding trends and things like that. Presentation doesn't include that, does it? Are they the same? Now you got me second guessing myself. Is it because of the egress comment?
It's the egress thing. I felt that you were trying to one-up me, so I thought I'd throw you in there. No, I think that analysis and presentation inside a BI tool is the same thing. So I might analyze the data as I'm presenting it. I usually navigate through BI type data most of the time. I'm like bringing in slicers and dicers, and I'm pivoting, and I'm doing all these cool things, and usually in Excel, right, the world's database. And all that looks cool, and at the end there's a pie chart and so on, and then at the end there's a bar graph, and there's a light yellow, green, red, and so on. And I had a senior executive the other day when I came in, and he said, "I'm happy to talk to you about analysis, but if you bring me one more data navigation tool, I will kick you in the baby maker." And so I promised that I wouldn't.
What did he mean by that?
What he meant was he had been inundated by people coming in saying, "Look at this cool new blank screen. Now you can start dragging things onto it and become basically a researcher." And he's like, "I'm a CEO. I don't have time for this."
Yeah,
And
I
so
feel
what
like that. I feel like I don't have time either. I like
No
that.
time. And so they want analysis done ahead of time. And the presentation may be how I view that analysis. But in fact, the analysis may have already been done. This is common in something called machine learning, where you can train a system to recognize a pattern and write its own programs to say, this will be a predictive element, or this is valid, or that's a green, red, or blue, and so on. These are the kind of things you see inside big data. So I usually look at it in, and I don't like doing it, but I have to look at it in a tools format. And so let's talk about that source and ingress, but let's stop for a minute and let's talk about not ingressing the data.
Not
So, yeah.
okay.
So one of my favorite kung fu movies is the one where Bruce Lee, the guy challenges him to a fight, and Bruce doesn't want to fight him. They're going to the island. And so he puts him in a rowboat, and he says, "I'll fight you in the rowboat." And then he lets the rowboat out, but he doesn't get in. And the
I
guy's
love
now
it.
behind the ship, and they looked at him, they're like, "What are you doing?" And he said, "The best way to fight is not to fight."
So, big data is sort of a battle to you. I got it.
No, I just like to watch Bruce Lee a lot. You may be able to get away with not moving the data anywhere. The fastest performance, the fastest code that you've ever written is the code that doesn't do anything, which in my case sometimes is a lot of code. But the point is, if it doesn't have to do any work, it's infinitely fast. So if I don't move the data, my data transfer rate is infinite. So why don't
I
I just
get
leave it where it's at? So you know those machines that were talking to me? How about if they didn't talk to me? What if I could just let them, as they're doing things, take actions based on what they're doing?
All
And
right.
we actually have a facility for that in SQL Server. This is on premises. It's called Stream Insight, and it's called Complex Event Processing, or CEP. So in CEP, stuff flows across. You can watch it, and you can do stuff based on that. BizTalk does that, and to a degree, the Windows Azure Service Bus could analyze data as things went across it and take an action. So big data goes away because there isn't any.
And to be fair, there's no such thing as a free lunch. If you're going to take this approach, prepare for what performance implication it might have and just plan
Absolutely.
for it, right?
And everything doesn't fit here. But the point is, I might say source or ingress because I might not even have to move the data. But sometimes you do. So if I need to ingress it, we certainly have BCP, Bulk Copy Program, and SQL Server, and we have SQL Server Integration Services, and it works very well. These are the things we own. There are lots of others. There's open source. I get that. These are our tools, is what I'm talking about.
Sure.
We have something called Scoop. Everything now has to be named after a child's stuffed toy. That's the new modem of the world. But at any rate, Scoop is the ability to take data from a relational database, or rather from a Hadoop cluster, which we'll talk about in a minute, and get it out to a relational database. And we have that. We also have, just in Windows Azure, we just have APIs. They're just program calls. We can go read data and write data with APIs. And then you have to think about storing it and processing it. So on premises, we have the relational database engine in SQL Server, which can handle really big data. Analysis services certainly can store data. And then we have the parallel data warehouse, which can do really big data on premises. Moving out to Azure, we now have Hadoop as a service. So Hadoop is the ability to store data in lots of places and then put the compute right over the data and bring back the answer. Sometimes that answer is to take petabytes of data down to gigabytes. and you still then put it in analysis services to work with later. So one does not preclude the other. So that's another way you can work. We have Hadoop on-premises and Hadoop in Azure. So you're able just to throw these jobs at Azure, have Hadoop run them and come back and then die and you're done with it. You rent it and you don't have to configure it. You don't have to deal with it. We have SQL Azure, now called Windows Azure SQL databases. And we have high performance computing, HPC. We actually have a product. There's a Windows server called HPC Server. That is now a worker role in Azure. You can ask for a Monte Carlo simulation, which is a type of mathematical thing that things like gas and oil exploration, financial systems, they use these huge known.
Very expensive to compute.
Very expensive. These guys will wake up, run a supercomputer for you, and close themselves off when they give you the answer back and say, it's 42. So we have that available, and you can just rent that. And the neat thing is the developer can just say, I need an HPC. Here's the data. And you can even keep the data in Azure or in Amazon. We'll let you use EC3 storage or EC2 storage, excuse me. Then we need to analyze it. We need to look at the data. Now, this is different than the exploratory analysis that you might do in BI, although we certainly have that. In SQL, you might use Transact SQL. In BI, you would use an MDX query. And the PDW uses something called a Nexus query, very Star Trek-y. In Hadoop, you use something called HiveQL or Pig Latin. HiveQL looks like SQL. Pig Latin looks like JavaScript. And God help us all, we have made a connector from Excel to Hadoop. I kid you not.
From Excel directly to Hadoop.
Right, directly to the largest database on the planet.
Goes to prove what you can do with Excel.
Excel's amazing.
It's amazing.
I really do. I think when the universe is over, there'll be a small Excel spreadsheet that was running the whole thing. So then you can also use APIs to manipulate the data. And then we also support these HPC jobs. You could run R in a worker role or a web role or a VM. You could even use F-sharp cloud numerics. F-sharp is a functional language from Microsoft Research. It works with big data real well, and it will swallow all the R packages so that it can use R without being R. And then Lucene is the full text search that's available open source. That runs on Azure just fine. And then finally, we do need to look at this stuff. And so, of course, you can't get past reporting services, PowerView or PowerPivot in SharePoint. And then Excel has the Hadoop Connect, the PowerView, and the PowerPivot. And then out in Azure, we actually have like a data explorer built in out there. So the point is this. We have ways of handling every portion of this. And this is just the Microsoft stack. If you wanted to go outside and mix other things in here, that's fine. But you've got these stages of what I call big data. And once again, we see it's not an all or nothing. It's something where we have to consider what we're trying to accomplish. So you can see, I think, the key here is that the architect or someone acting as an architect becomes sort of the king of the system again. This is very common. We're switching back to the mainframe when we have specialized knowledge. At least right now, the technical professionals like you and I and the people that are listening right now are the keys to these companies being able to mine this data, and data is gold. Right now, data is just absolutely gold, and we should take advantage of it by learning what's out there, like on Azure, and what there is to offer, and how we can use it to make our companies go zoom.
And you know, there's a lot of data loss out there, right, where people are it's coming to us. A lot of companies don't realize they already have the data they need to make most of the business decisions that they need to make. It's sitting right there. They just don't know how to get into it. Others, they have it, and it's just passing them by, and they aren't just grabbing it and storing it so they can make those decisions. Both of those.
Yeah.
If you were an architect watching this show, and you were like, okay, I can see where the application that I'm sitting on was written from the wrong side, right? I can see that now.
Yeah.
But I don't have the luxury of starting from scratch. What do you recommend to those guys? Like, what's the – okay, your first step should be, what do you say next?
So I go with two things. And the two things I go with are what's broken and what can't we do today that we need to do. So if something's broken, you're going to have to re-architect it anyway.
Yeah.
So start with the new pattern of thinking and molding these hybrid architectures we talked about in the first couple of interviews. Start looking at those. Can I just fold in what I'm doing? And if I'm doing something new, start the right way. start the right way. And if you make these contracts for your APIs to talk to data and get data, you keep yourself from getting into that situation again in large part. You might have to make a whole new API, yeah. But as long as I still call that API by that name and I send this in and that out, I'm in good shape.
And usually the first thing they can't do is answer some sort of intelligence question, right?
There you go.
That's what it is. And it's a dangerous, slippery slope because as soon as you answer one question, it's always going to lead to another that they never even considered before.
That's
because
right.
They couldn't answer the first one in the first place.
That's right. That's absolutely true. Absolutely.
There's a lot to think about. A lot of power in Azure, don't you think? It's pretty impressive.
I see this every day to where at first it's just, yeah, we would never consider that. Our company can't put anything in the cloud. We have private data. By the time we get down and we sit down with it, they don't know where to start. There's so many places it can be used.
Yeah, it's amazing how the breadth of it is really amazing to me too. And the fact that you get, for really it's pennies on the dollar. The scalability that you have is pretty astounding.
Yeah.
The interoperability with all of these other things, you get lots of bonus features for sure.
Yeah, it's not always a cost decision. Sometimes it's a capability. Sometimes it costs more. But it depends on what you're trying to do.
Customers you meet with that sometimes give you pushback on, we need to have all of our data, private. What ends up happening to them often?
Always hybrid. And so we do keep some private, but we have to get past the hurdle of thinking about the data atomically if we can first.
Yeah, so. It's not a cloud or no cloud scenario.
That's correct.
Right?
That is correct.
Get that out of your mind. It's not all off premises, right?
That's correct. Well, listen, thank you so much for the time and allowing me to chat with you today. It's great meeting you, and I hate you because you're in the sunshine. But other than that, it's been a really great discussion. I used to live in Florida, so I'm missing it a lot.
Well, the great thing is you have lights in your house. So, it's kind of like the same. Right?
For the moment.
Buck, seriously, thanks. There's so much to talk about around Azure, and it's neat to think about it from a developer's point of view. What can we do when we're thinking about designing our systems? What can we do when we want to think ahead about scalability, usability of the data, being able to handle things correctly without making expensive mistakes, right?
Yeah.
That really cost not just us in time, but our clients in dollars. Thanks
again.
I appreciate it, Buck. Thanks for being on the show.
Thanks, guys.